great tone. Everyone can tell what it is, but how do you get it? With so many styles of music, with new gear coming out almost daily, what's the secret to great tone? Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show, where we talk about tone, what it is, and how to get it. With your hosts, Jeff Floro and Scott Sill, we will talk to the creators of tone, the manufacturers, and the players, as we explore tone and the gear that gets it.
Tonight on the Flow Guitar Enthusiast, we are proud to welcome Mitch Gallagher, author of the book Guitar Tone, Pursuing the Ultimate Guitar Tone, and Sweetwater's host of their YouTube series, Sweetwater Minute. Flow Guitar Enthusiast is proudly sponsored by Sweetwater Musical Instruments and Pro Audio, and our good friends at Guitar Hummer at GuitarHummer.com. And now, here are your hosts, Jeff Flo to the Izzo Floro and Scott Sill.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show. Hey, Scott, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm sore from carrying a 30-pound bag of camera and audio equipment for 3 days. But, you know, hey, it came out pretty good. So I think I've shot – I was trying to figure it up. I think I shot about 30 to 35 videos, possibly 40.
Wow.
At the NAMM show of different companies. So it was pretty crazy.
Yeah, they were. It was fun because I was there with you while you were shooting them in there. We got some really interesting stuff to look forward to. As you post that stuff, some of the interviews are amazing.
Yeah, some of the ones I've already got up are, I've got two videos up for PRS with their new Archon amp and their S2 series. I've got Audio-Technica's new little wireless stomp box. What else did I do? Oh, the three Taylor videos, so the 800 series, the 200 series, and their T5Z. But the videos that are... Well, there's just no way these are going to compete with these videos, but the videos that are just killing it on YouTube is what we saw on Saturday night.
Yes, we want to thank Dan Boole from 65 Amps for inviting us over there. It was a great concert.
It was a very Hollywood moment, actually, for the gear exciting part of it. The most exciting thing of that was seeing the Gibson 12-string that Johnny Depp was playing at this little show, and I believe... If I was to guess, because he clearly knows the folks from Aerosmith, I bet that is the 12-string that Joe Perry was pictured with on Guitar Center's magazine. So he maybe bought it from her or something. Anyways, but because it had the custom logo and everything. Anyways, but the cool part about it was Johnny Depp was playing with his band. He brought out Marilyn Manson, Alice Cooper, and who am I forgetting?
Steve Tyler.
Oh, yeah, that guy. Steve Tyler.
Yeah, that guy.
We have a clip, actually. Do you want to play that clip? It's some Beatles tune.
All right, here we go. Here's the clip.
Yeah, so Johnny Depp is on guitar, and you know what's really weird about that, besides being just like one of those weird Hollywood things that happen, is that I am used to seeing people jam with guitars and having people come out and do that. Singers doing a whole like compilation with singers was weird to me, actually. But
I've seen that before, but it was they actually worked well together. Johnny Depp was showing – he was playing his custom model that Duesenberg made for him, a very – had a good sound to it. I went over to the booth the next day and took some pictures of it. It's nice. It's a very nice guitar.
Better be for $12,000.
Well, yeah, but it's kind of cool with it. I mean, it's got like that metal finish and stuff, like a Zamatis. If you compare it to like a Zamatis, it's pretty close to the same around the same price. But anyway.
Yeah. But the cool thing about it was the whole event was for charity. And so there was a lot of money raised. They sold the guitar at the end, autographed by all the folks, which included the Johnny Depp guitar also. So so they made a lot of money for some, I think for the school, was it for the school?
The school in that art center. It's over by Servite High School, and they have a performing arts center over there, so it benefited them. It was a cool thing.
Well, yeah, and the other thing weird was there was Marilyn Manson performing in a Christian school, which was
high school.
Funny.
The best part was Alice Cooper doing "Schools Out." Perfect for the perfect.
It was great. Anyways, yeah. So and if anyone's listening live, the folks are listening live, and you want to call in and ask Mitch a question, our guest, you can call 323-203-0815, 323-203-0815, or you can join us on our chat room and on our website, www.flowguitarenthusiast.com. So why don't we take a quick break, and then we'll bring Mitch on.
Okay. Here we go.
Hi, this is Aaron Raby, your resident guitars and amps geek at Sweetwater Sound. 1-800-222-4700 or catch us on the web at www.sweetwater.com. Sweetwater is proud to partner with The Flow in bringing you the latest and greatest in all guitar-related things, be it tone, be it artists and musicians, their secrets on their tone, amplification, and live performance. We at Sweetwater are just as passionate as the folks on The Flow in bringing you what we consider to be the best in pro audio equipment and guitar and PA gear. Give us a call and we'll discuss gear whenever you like. The number here is 800-222-4700. And again, you can catch us on the web at www.sweetwater.com. I'm Aaron Raby, and thanks again for listening.
There's a product out called Guitar Hunter that's designed to give you vintage sound without the vintage weight. We all know the more a guitar is played, the better the sound. Guitar Hummer is a guitar stand that simulates play by sending gentle vibrations through your guitar as it sits. Swap your guitar stand for Guitar Hummer, and in just a few weeks, you will notice deeper, richer tone and improved sustain. But don't take our word for it. Try it for 60 days, and if you don't notice a marked difference, return it for a full refund. Go to GuitarHummer.com for more information or to purchase.
All right, everyone, you are listening to Jeff and Scott on the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show, and I'm Paul Reed Smith from PRS Guitars, and that's kind of what's going on. Enjoy the show.
All right, folks, welcome back. Mitch, are you on the phone?
I am on the phone. How you doing, guys?
Good. How you doing, Mitch?
I'm doing great.
So you just flew back to Fort Wayne from the NAMM show last night, correct?
That is correct. Yeah, I got in last night and been trying to catch up today.
Yeah, and probably trying to take some Advil, I'm sure.
Yeah, right. It is an intense 4 or 5 days.
Yeah, it is. But tell us about how, because you do a multitude of things. If I remember, aren't you a professor too, right? You're a professor at a school, is that correct?
I teach at, there's a branch of Indiana University and Purdue University here in Fort Wayne. I teach recording over there. I teach Audio 2 and Audio 3 and music business as well.
Wow. And then you've written multiple books, but I think your most recent one is The Guitar Tone, Pursuing the Ultimate Tone, correct?
Yeah, that is the most recent, right.
And then, for those of us that like to watch videos on YouTube, they can't miss you because you're on, probably 70% of the Sweetwater videos because you have a Sweetwater Minute clip, and then you do many other things with them.
That's right. We do 3 shows every week. We do an iOS update video for iPad and iPhone music stuff, and we do a Guitars and Gear video every Wednesday, and then we do the Sweetwater Minute every Friday.
Wow. So tell us, how did you get involved in this and what brought you to Sweetwater?
This is actually my second time at Sweetwater. I grew up in the Midwest. I'm from North Dakota and was a guitar player, went on the road and did that whole thing and went to school and got a music degree and decided to look for something different. And in 1992, I was hired at Sweetwater, and I was actually the 5th sales engineer. So I was one of the very early guys that was here. And I was here until 98. I left to go to Keyboard Magazine, which may seem strange for a guitar player, but I was really into the technology and keyboard computers and all that stuff. And I went from there to being the editor-in-chief of EQ Magazine. And I was there till 2005, and it worked out to come back here to Sweetwater in 2005 and kind of continue what I had been doing at the magazines, but doing it for Sweetwater and also moving that into the video era.
Yeah, I remember your... that's when I first heard about you, was from those magazines, like even the Keyboard, and I think you did some stuff for Guitar Player. But also, too, Sweetwater used to send out their magazine, and you had all this stuff in there, which was really cool.
Yeah, we still do that. We still do Sweet Notes. We do that 4 times a year, and it's basically a magazine thing. And I still write for Premier Guitar. I have a column in Premier Guitar called Guitar Tracks, and I do feature articles for them as well.
That's great. Yeah. No, I've read those articles. Very good. Very good stuff.
Yeah, thanks.
So being at NAMM for 4 days, just off the top of your head, what was in your mind the thing that surprised you the most, or the one item that you think is kind of maybe not the winner, but just the one thing that really wet your palate?
Oh, boy.
Doesn't have to be guitar.
This was, I'm sorry?
It doesn't have to be guitar related.
There was so much new stuff at this show. This is actually the best NAMM show I remember in a number of years. There were so many new products. I mean, recording stuff, Universal Audio, the Apollo Twin, mm-hmm. I think is a really cool little audio interface, connects by Thunderbolt, has DSP power on board. There was a plugin called Drumatom that lets you take drum bleed out of track. So if you like record a drum kit and you can hear the snare drum coming into the kick drum mic, mm-hmm. this plugin will take that snare drum out and give you just the kick drum.
Wow,
pretty crazy. It was pretty darn amazing. In guitar stuff, you know, there's so many guitars there. The one that I totally wanted to take home was the ES Les Paul. Did you guys see that up in the Gibson booth?
Yes. It's funny that they're doing that, because basically to me that's a Florentine Les Paul. But they had a bunch of them. They had like one from the Memphis one, and then they had a couple from the regular USA factory, or the Nashville guys, right? And right. And I was super excited because I love those Florentines, and it was, yeah. The one thing they didn't have there that I wanted to try and play, but you guys have it on your site, you're selling it, is the Les Paul recording.
Yeah, isn't that cool?
Yeah, so.
Yeah, it's a reissue of Les's, the way that he actually had his guitar set up with the low impedance pickups and a little different approach that he had to how he wanted everything to sound.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was a little disappointed they didn't have it, but because
that was not there.
That's, you know, so one guitar, because I'm kind of a freak for Les Paul, and
right.
I'm probably one of the only people that want it just because he played it, and because it's not the most popular Les Paul. It's really not a popular Les Paul at all, but.
But a very unusual one.
Yes, yeah. So I kind of like the unusual. Like my the other Les Paul I really want to get is the B Bender that they did last year.
Oh yeah.
So I just like the weird ones that they do, but you know, that's just me. But what did you what else did you see in the acoustic guitar world? Is there anything out there that you saw that was pretty interesting?
The 800 series from Taylor I think is phenomenal.
Yeah.
Kind of their higher end acoustic electrics with they've got the new Expression 2 system in that for the pickup, the rosewood trim on the top, and it's got a rosewood pick guard and beautiful woods, and they've gone back to using some of the organic glues like you would have used, you know, in the old days, which they're saying really helps the resonance and helps transfer vibration. So I'm interested to play one of those, but they look gorgeous.
Yeah, I got on Sunday. I was able to play and sit down and play them, the 800 series, and I went through the different models, and they all had that like really rich overtones. And then when you fingerpicked, the middle voices were just real clear, and that horsehide glue type of technique. Martin was tuning that on. They were making their vintage series, and I think also Yamaha was doing that.
I don't think it's actually. I don't know if it would be called hide glue, because they said it was made from fish.
Yeah, they called it a protein glue.
Yeah.
Okay. I think it's the same. It's the same idea. It's an organic-based glue. And actually, Gibson's doing that the last couple of years with their solid bodies as well, right?
Yeah, I think they're doing on the R9s, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's we seem to be seeing a move back toward the things that affected the tone, you know, back in the 50s and before.
Well, it's kind of funny. It's like, I don't. At one point, we had somebody on our show that made you know, I thought was a pretty true statement, basically saying, you know, the guitar, you know, was invented 60 years ago, and it really has never changed. And we really just, there's no one that's really proved it from the years 60 years ago, like the Stratocaster and Les Paul. I mean, they have, but you know, it's essentially the same design. But we've got a clip of the 800 series, and what's unique about that, also to worth mentioning, is that all the different size bodies are all done with different bracing and unique, done by their master luthier, Andy Powers. So they're all unique. So if you get the Dreadnought versus their orchestra model, or not orchestra, what do they call it, the Grand Orchestra, it's different bracing in there.
Yeah, and also, too, I think the top varies. It's not like I think there's the thickness varies a little bit.
I think they thinned the wood. They also thinned the finish. They did a whole bunch of other things to it. But let's listen to it here. This is actually recorded with using their new ES2 pickup. that was Corey Witt, who I think has actually been down to your guys' facility a few times.
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, so, but yeah, that was, when I played that guitar, I was quite amazed, and the sound of it was just like, and then you just pick up the different size body, and it was like a whole different sound, but still sounded. I mean, I think, they hit it out of the ballpark with that one.
Yeah, those are great guitars. Like you say, the cool thing is you can choose a different body style. So if you're a finger style guy, you can choose the one that's going to have the articulation and the separation between the voices. And if you want to do more heavy strumming, or you're a bluegrass picker, they have a body style for that. So you can really choose the guitar that fits what you want to do.
Absolutely. So the other thing that I was super excited about, and it's only just because I'm no one was really making. I mean, there's some folks that make them that are boutique pedal makers, but Dunlop hasn't been making this for a couple of years now. They've now come back out with the Univibe, which I'm pretty excited about.
That looks really cool.
Yeah, and it even has kind of a look to it that looks kind of like the original Univibe. It's got that gray black look to it.
It's really small. Not as huge.
Yeah, no, it's much smaller and much fits on your.
It actually fits on a pedal board now.
Yeah, so I mean, yeah, I the one thing I didn't get to ask him, and I should ask him, if it was how different the circuit was from the Hendrix Univibe that they did that was a limited edition, because
I asked him about that, and actually, I think it's really similar.
Really, that's good because the one thing I have to say is, I have the Univibe that they released that you can plug the expression pedal into it. It's good, but the Hendrix one just has a better sound. I don't know why, but it does. So I'm hoping this one sounds like that. We have a clip of that too, if you want to play it. This is starts out with a clean tone. Well, it's without the Univibe. It's a distorted amp. And then you can hear the guy messing with the Univibe a little bit. So. Do you know when that will be released?
I don't. I'm sorry.
Ah. Yeah, I'm kind of wondering when that will be out. I was just looking to see if you guys had it on your site yet or not. But, yeah, that one I think I will be picking up.
Yeah, I think that one was cool. The other one that they had quite a few new pedals, but the other one that interested me was the Echoplex preamp. Did you see that one?
Yeah. We shot a demo. Yeah, when we went to them, we shot a demo, and I think we were there for like 40 minutes because they had – it had to be like 15 new pedals. It was crazy.
Yeah. A lot of stuff, yeah.
I kind of nudged them that, now that you have this Echoplex preamp, why don't you just kind of add the delay, even if it's Bucket Brigade, so you have a little Echoplex, and they smiled. So maybe we might see something.
Yeah.
Yes.
That would be cool.
What other in the pedal world did you happen to run into that you thought was pretty interesting?
Did you see the Proco Fat Rat?
Oh yeah, the new rat pedal. I did not see it, but I saw some emails about it. What was unique about that?
It's pretty interesting actually. You can set it up so that it has the usual rat controls. There's the three controls, but it has two switches on it that you can use to dial in the tone. So if you set them all to the kind of basic setting, it's a vintage style rat. But then you kick on the switches and you get fuller bottom end one way, and you get a little bit more gain, you get a little smoother sound. So you can really tailor it to be either a vintage rat or a more modern overdrive distortion pedal.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool. Pretty versatile.
They haven't released many pedals recently, have they? Like this is like a new one in a long time, right?
Well, there's a whole family of rats. There's like six or seven of them.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there's higher gain ones, and then they did the original white logo ones. They reissued those, and there's a whole family of them, but they kind of do it quietly. They don't make a lot of noise about it. No pun intended.
Nice. One of the other pedals that we took a lot. It's been out for a few months. We looked at the went and visited Wampler, and they had their Ace 30. Well, it was called the Ace 30 until. They got a letter from Vox or call, and it's now called something different, which I think I got an email back from Brian saying that we can actually say it. So it's called 30 something is what the new name
30
is.
Something. It's official.
Yes. So that will be the new name of it, but that's a Vox AC 30 emulator.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's a pretty cool little pedal. And I think, what, Jeff, you took...
Steve Hunter was real interested in it. Yeah, on Sunday, we went down there, and I introduced him to Brian. And he really liked that pedal. It's nice. I mean, if you... It gets a really nice... It's pretty accurate. I mean, well, Brian's really meticulous on his sounds, but... did you get a chance to hear that one, Mitch?
I did not.
I recommend it. I'm sure you'll get one over. You'll see one soon. But you got to try it out. It's really nice.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. That's cool.
Shall we play the clip so he can hear it? This is supposed to be what's the guy's name? This is Martin McDaniel, and he's playing it. Brian set up to be a Brian May sound.
Is this the Wampler 30
something? Yes.
There we go.
There you go. That's the Brian May sound off the 30 something, or formerly known as the Ace 30. I was joking with Brian Wampler that I was like now there's going to be this myth that the Ace 30s sound better.
Right.
it's the extra graphic on there vibrates less.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So I should mention just to be nice, the guy that played the Univibe was Tal Morris. From Dunlop, so should credit him for that. But.
And he did a great job. They really nailed it. It was great. The videos, when the video comes out, you can hear it. It's really nice.
Yeah. So I already the videos of the 800 series and the Taylor stuff are up that you guys can check out. You can also check out all the videos of the Johnny Depp thing if you really want to. But it's just cell phone footage. It's not that exciting. Other than if you like Marilyn.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, they did a good job. It was interesting to see those guys and all of them together. It was kind of a unique experience.
So one of the things that you just got recently done doing, I saw a video on it, was you put in a studio, or you've obviously been working on the studio for a while. So you guys did a whole video on your in-home studio. Can you tell us about that?
I'm sorry?
Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I had a room in my house. It was in the basement that the previous owner had kind of used as a workshop, so it was an unfinished room. And I was looking for a place where I could – originally all I was looking for was a place that I could kind of soundproof so I could practice guitar without driving my wife crazy. Mm-hmm. And as I started working on it, I realized it could become a little bit more than that. And I do quite a bit of studio work as well, so I decided to build out the room. And so we soundproofed it by doing basically it's a suspended ceiling of double layers of 5/8-inch drywall with insulation that is basically mounted on springs. And then built out the walls with double drywall and insulation, and added a what's called a bass trap, a big bass trap in the back of the room to control low frequencies, and kind of tried to do it on a budget without breaking the bank and without making it ridiculous to where if we ever sell the house, the next owner comes in and goes, "What am I going to do with this recording studio in the basement?" Kind of thing. And so the video was kind of a description of the whole process I went through of how I planned the build, how I got the people in to do the build, what we did. There's photographs that go through the whole process. And we're going to do a second one that will cover the gear that I've got in here, all the studio equipment. It got to be an hour and 15 minutes long just talking about the studio. So trying to do gear on top of that would have made it a bit too long. So we're going to come back around and do a second edition on that.
So I guess the big question is there any gear that you saw at NAMM that you're going to add to your studio that wasn't there before?
Oh, there's always way too much stuff at NAMM to add to your studio. there's a new microphone, the V4U from Shep's. That's pretty incredible. There's a new system from Steven Slate that lets you model different microphones. So you record with his microphone, which is like this super neutral microphone. Mm-hmm. And then you apply processing to it to turn it into other microphones and other preamps so you can get vintage sounds or more modern sounds or whatever kind of microphone you want to use. So, yeah, there's some fun stuff that's out there from NAMM this year.
Interesting. I wonder if that's a similar process that Larry Fishman did with those Martin Retros.
It's kind of that idea. They must have some kind of I think the Fishman, they called them images, right?
Yeah.
I think it's a similar kind of an idea. There's a plugin that you apply to the tracks after you've recorded them that basically shapes them. So I don't know if it's a convolution type of a thing or some type of modeling they're doing, but yeah, it's the same idea.
Very cool.
Mitch, I got a question for you, because I was talking with Steve about his album that he did, the Manhattan Blues Project, and one of the things he did is he was using some of the digital stuff that you have in your computer, the plug-in type of stuff. Did you see anything interesting, and what's your take on the plugins? Do you think they work, or because some of them I couldn't even tell the difference, to be honest with you, what he was playing, and he told me that he was using a plug-in. I was pretty amazed. I thought it was an amp. But what's your take on that, and did you see anything interesting about that?
I didn't see a lot of new model guitar plug-in stuff. There is – I'm trying to think of the company. There was so many companies there. Brainworks mm-hmm. has their Ignator stuff that they did for the Universal Audio UAD platform.
Mm-hmm.
And that sounds really good. To answer your question, yes, I think the modeling stuff's incredible. It's scary how close it is.
Mm-hmm.
And in a mix, boy, I think you'd be hard pressed to tell whether you're hearing, you know, a plug-in, or whether you're hearing an amp that's been mic'd up and then processed and compressed and EQ'd and run through, you know,
mm-hmm.
all kinds of stuff. You know, by the time you get to that point, it is really tough to tell. As a player, you have to try it for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether you can get the exact tone that you want. It's the same with anything else. Can you get your tone out of this amp, or do you need this amp? Can you get it out of this plug-in or this plug-in?
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, it's absolutely a viable way to go, and it's certainly a great way to go if you're in a situation where you can't crank up an amp.
Yeah.
Which most of us are most of the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of the things from – and let me ask you about this, too. If you're using a guitar sound, you're amping it, and it's distorted, you're compressing it, you're processing it a lot – and you're putting in the mix, that's one thing. But a lot of albums where they take an amp and put it in a room and you're moving the air, do you think you can get that from the from those modeling systems? Or do you – I mean, I understand in a mix where you're layering your guitars and you're doing a bunch of stuff, it blends. But do you think with a good reverb you can get that type of room, get the room feel?
Can you get the actual room sound? Absolutely.
Okay.
The convolution reverbs, where they're doing kind of the same thing we were talking about with the images on the Fishman or the microphones, where mm-hmm. they're actually taking basically a snapshot of a real room and then applying that back onto the signal.
Mm-hmm.
They're so realistic, it's amazing.
Yeah, I think that. So you think? Well, I know that some of the groups, like I think Rush, Alex Lifeson's, he's using those type of things. He's using like a laptop to switch from effects, and he's doing multiple effect systems using the computer now.
I think there are more guys doing that maybe than we all think.
Mm-hmm.
It's sure a lot easier than having to have racks and racks of stuff, or trying to control that volume issue.
Yeah,
because it's I like to play as loud as the next guy, but that's not always conducive to the best even live sound
mm-hmm.
situation. You know, if you're blasting on stage, it makes it really tough on the front of house sound guy, to say nothing of the monitor guy. And so that whole volume control issue has really become a big deal. And being able to do some of that stuff virtually really makes it a lot easier.
Yes.
And again, in those situations, you have to question, can you hear the difference or not? And I'm as much or more of a purist than anybody. I mean, there's nothing I love better than feeling a amp move my pants legs, you know? Or
yeah, yeah.
Me in the chest. But, you know, in the real world, you go with what works. And mm-hmm. that stuff definitely works. And it's I don't want to give the impression that, oh, you're settling for using this modeled thing or whatever, because you're really not. It really is a viable solution at this point.
Yeah. And I mean, also too, the radical change you can do, because I mean, literally everything's virtual. You can change for groups that are playing clubs and they're doing top 40 and they're playing different, radically different songs. It's just a switch, boom, and it's right there. They get the total. They can totally change your sound. So it's quite it's quite powerful even for the working musician that's doing the club thing, where you got to play a lot of different sounds. It makes a difference.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So,
go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, so speaking with amps, and if you forgetting the modeling side of it, if you were on an island, what would be the amp that you would take with you?
Man. Lately, I've been playing through a reissue 65 Deluxe that I put I'm drawing a blank, the Cannabis Rex 12 into it.
Oh, okay.
And I've got some tungsole tubes in there, and that combination in that particular deluxe is sounding phenomenal. And I've just been loving that app. I've been using it in the studio a lot, and I've had several studio guitarists come in from Nashville and LA and play through that thing. And that particular amp is just killing me. And it's an off the shelf 65 reissue deluxe.
So not hand-wired or anything like that? Just
Nope, just straight up. And I like that speaker, so that's the speaker that I put it in. It's just really working in that situation.
That's cool.
The other one, though, that I saw at NAMM, since we're on the NAMM show, was the Hughes & Kettner, the Grandmeister 36.
Mm-hmm.
You know, talking about the whole versatility thing, or if you want to have one amp to where, okay, I'm on the desert island, and today I want to play country, and tomorrow I want to play metal. That amp basically is a whole system in one lunchbox-sized head. So it has four different amps in it. It's powered by four EL84s, and there's a switch on the front for voicing it. So you can go from clean to crunch to, you know, to a higher gain. And then it has built-in effects as well. And with a MIDI pedal, you can change presets. So you can have your delays, you can have your reverbs, and all that stuff switches instantly. It's 36 watts, four EL84s. And I thought it sounded phenomenal. They were playing it through a 2x12 at the show, and I was very impressed.
Was that the different, you were saying it was like four different amps. Was that digitized, or they actually had four different preamps to get the sound? Do you know?
I probably misspoke when I said four different amps. What I meant is there's four different voicings that are switchable on the front, and they're not modeled. It's an all-tube amp.
Oh, okay. That's cool.
So what they're doing is changing the gain level. And I don't know if they're switching tubes in and out or changing tone stacks or what they're doing, but something is changing as they go from clean to crunch to high gain to, I guess it'd be super high gain or whatever it is, and then with the effects in there as well.
That's great. Now, that's, yeah, a lot of people, again, that's another demand to be able to switch from, you know, to be able to get the different tones and different amp tones now. And you're seeing some of the amp companies like getting their, you know, like they'll have their Marshall type sound, they'll have their Fender type sound, they're mixing them, and you can switch between the two. It seems to be a trend.
It makes a lot of sense. This thing, I mean, it's a slightly large size lunchbox, and grab that in your speaker cabinet and you can do the whole gig. You don't have to have a pedal board. You're kind of covered right there with the one thing. So for grab it and go, or if you're doing several gigs on a weekend, or on one night you're playing blues and the next night you're playing pop or whatever, you can kind of cover all that with just one amp that's easy to get around with.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember what you might have said, but what was the wattage on that?
I think it's 36 watts.
Okay, so not too bad.
It's the Grandmeister 36, so I'm assuming that's what that means.
Ah, okay. Yeah, the other thing I was noticing, and you know, was that it seemed like there was a lot of companies coming out with high gain amps. Like,
yeah.
PRS had their new Archon, which was a high gain amp for them, which was their kind of dive into that, which was a pretty nice sounding little amp.
And 65 Amps had the Whiskey.
The Whiskey,
which
yeah.
was, I tried that, was a nice amp too. That had a nice gain stage.
Yeah, yeah. So both very cool little amps. And then Fender came out with their new Pawn Shop. What is that one called? It's called,
is it the Rampart or the Rampage?
Well, they had the Rampart, and then they had the other one, too, that kind of like, what is it, skips the whole volume and the whole thing. And they call,
I thought was interesting was I saw they made a deluxe reverb head, both the tweed type and the blackface, which was interesting because Steve Hunter was saying, you know, I don't understand why people use combos because the vibration from the speakers, he felt messed with the tubes and caused them to wear out prematurely. He preferred to have a head for them, but they actually came out with a head. That was kind of cool.
I love that idea, and it's awesome for the studio because you can sit in the control room with a 57 deluxe head and then the 65 deluxe head and just switch to the same speaker cabinet that's out in the studio, and it makes it so easy to record.
Yeah,
and you have
yeah.
Those sounds are right there, you know, just kind of right at your fingertips.
Yeah, it was a nice – I'm surprised they hadn't done that before because even earlier years there was a Bandmaster Reverb, which was like a, you know, the smaller version of the Showman. But, I mean, yeah, it was kind of a – it's like my reaction was like, why didn't they do this before? It was kind of cool.
Yeah, I like it.
So the Fender was the vaporizer.
That's it, yeah.
Yeah. So it's kind of interesting. I think you guys did a video on it. I saw just posted up a couple days ago from NAMM.
Right.
So that's kind of cool. I think it's just a regular old little – I like their little pawn shop things. I think it's pretty cool. But this one, you press a button and it like totally skips the volume and the tone stack and everything. It just kind of goes full on bore. You know?
Yeah. Right.
And they're fairly reasonable. They're not as expensive as the other, but they deliver. I mean, that one with the 15, I forget the model number, the Fender amp, it wasn't that expensive. And it cranked. It was good. It had a good sound.
It was really swampy.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was their last year's model. I think that's called the Excelsior or something
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, it was cool.
So it was cool. That's a cool amp. That one, I think, that one, when I saw that, I was like, oh, because they've got like the, if I remember the way it's built, if you look in the back, the preamp is at the top and then the back part of the amp is in the bottom. And I'm like, oh man, that would be so easy to mod and do all kinds of fun stuff to it.
Mm-hmm.
But anyhow, we should take a quick break here and then we'll come back and we'll talk more about NAMM and we'll ask Mitch about his book.
Do you want to get the best possible tone from your acoustic instrument? Guitar Hummer is a guitar stand that does more than just rest your guitar. It creates a gentle but continuous vibration that is equivalent to playing your instrument all day, every day. This concentrates years of seasoning into mere weeks, improving tone and sustain. You may not be able to afford a vintage guitar, but you now can achieve vintage sound. But don't take our word for it. Try it for 60 days, and if you don't notice a marked difference, return it for a full refund. Go to GuitarHummer.com for more information or to purchase.
Hi, I'm Richard Kotze from the Winery Dogs, and you are listening to The Flow Guitar Enthusiast.
We're back. We saw Richie over at the Samson booth.
Yeah. Yeah. He was there for a signing and apparently showed up an hour early.
He was checking out all the stuff. It was good to see him.
Yeah, I think Samson had, I think they said they bought some new pedal company. They have these little tiny pedals. I don't know if you saw those, Mitch, but they were like,
super small, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. They're like the size if you put two matchboxes, like two match, you know, little matchboxes on top of each other. They're about that size.
Speaking of pedals, I heard the news before the show was the fact that Yamaha bought Line 6. Any opinions on that, or where do you think that's going to go?
I think that's actually going to be really great for both those companies. I mean, we've seen Yamaha before. They purchased Steinberg, and they've done really well with that, with mm-hmm. the Cubase software and the developments they've done there and the way that's worked back and forth between Yamaha and Steinberg. I predict you'll see the same thing. I think they're going to let Line 6 continue as kind of an independent entity, but Line 6 can take advantage of Yamaha, which is a giant company, and that technology from Line 6, I think you're going to see make its way into some of Yamaha stuff too. So I think that's going to be a really good synergy.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. You think they'll keep PRS as PRS, because I was thinking you're going to start seeing all of that integrated.
Line 6.
God, I don't know why it's a mental block. But anyway, that was the thing. I was going to, because they have their own multi effects, but the stuff that Line 6 comes out is pretty amazing. So, but you think they'll keep the company separate?
I think they will.
Well, so
they have a history of doing that. So I hope so.
Okay.
Yeah, I think actually that was part of the press release, is they said that they were going to keep them separate, but I'm trying to think of that song from the 90s, Keep Them Separate. Anyway, so. but you know, we went by Yamaha, and I think one of the things that was a big announcement for them is they've always made acoustics, and they've always been kind of more of the affordable range for the acoustics, but now they're doing affordable still, but all solid woods, and I think they call it the L series. And it's pretty interesting. We actually heard a demo of it, and it sounded pretty good. It had abalone in it. It had, I think they were doing some sort of, you know, organic or high glue sort of thing. They also do a vibration thing that they do where they vibrate the wood, just like they do with Billy Sheehan's bass, I guess, and all kinds of new little things with that series. And I think the guy that we met with, Armando Vega, who... We have a sound clip of him playing it, but I think he said it was under $1,000.
Yeah, and it was inlaid. I mean, it had a lot of inlay on it, too.
Did you get to see those at all, the L series?
I saw those. I didn't play them. I was at there's an event every Saturday, the last Saturday of NAMM every year. There's an event called All-Star Guitar Night that Muriel Anderson puts on. It's a charity thing where they bring in all these great guitarists every year. It's different guitarists, but there were four or five of the guys that were playing those, you know, fingerstyle guys and different styles, and boy, they sounded phenomenal.
Yeah, I mean, if they're under $1,000, I mean, you can't really go wrong. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I mean, you know, a Martin D28 has its sound, and it's the sound, one of the sounds you have to have in your arsenal, and that 800 series Taylor, I think people need to have that in their arsenal.
Oh, yeah. But the Yamaha, I have an old FG-180 that's about 40 years old, and it's mellowed out really nice. But their guitars in their midline for the, you know, the beginning guitarist or, you know, the starting working musician, you know, in the $200 to $500 range. They're decent guitars for what, you know, Yamaha makes quality stuff. They play really well, and I used mine for countless sessions, and it still sounds great, you know, and it wasn't an expensive one, so.
Why don't we play the clip from, this is their sales guy, Armando Vega, playing the L-Series. Nice sound.
It's got great overtones.
Minus the slight crowd noise you can hear there.
Yeah, that was a good recording considering all. It was really noisy there.
It was. It's an authentic NAMM Show recording.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, I was running around with my little Sennheiser 609. That's what I was recording those with.
Nice.
But, here's a question for you. Do you know of a little mini boom mic stand? Because I'm using I think it's called the DR Pro or something like that, which is a great stand for the studio, but terrible for lugging around all day. It's heavy as all get out. Do you know a light one?
That's an excellent question. Not off the top of my head.
Yes.
I'm sure there is something, though, because so many guys who do location recording and things.
Oh, my God. Yeah, my shoulder's still hurting me, but.
It's the price you pay, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, it turned out pretty good. I mean, that one was, I think, the noisiest one I have. But the rest of them all turned out pretty good. So I was, but that one, unlike the Taylor one, where we actually were recording the mic and it was playing out of an amp or something, or an acoustic amp. This is the only one that we recorded that was literally just pressed up against the guitar. So that's why it had the noise. But anyhow, it was. It was fun. It's just interesting running around seeing all these different things. So tell us about your book, The Guitar Tone, Pursuing of the Ultimate Guitar. What's in that book?
My idea with that book is, I mean, I'm just kind of a freak about that stuff. I love to dig in and just be really tweaky about different kinds of tubes and different circuits and different speakers and just forever experimenting with pedals and, you know, just always trying all the different options and tearing stuff apart and working with it. And I just got increasingly interested in it and wasn't really finding a resource that kind of brought all of it together into one place. So my goal was to kind of make this encyclopedia of guitar tone. And so I started at the very beginning with wood and go all the way through the wood, the hardware, pickups, electronics, amplifiers, speakers, effects, cables, you know, kind of every aspect that I could think of that was part of guitar tone, and brought it all. That's kind of the first two thirds of the book. And then the last third of the book is, I guess you'd call them case studies of famous players who are well known for their tone and how they got their tone through the different eras of the, you know, for example, Eric Clapton has several different eras of tone, right? And so I examine each of those and the gear that he used to get those. And then also at the end of each of those, give you a list of equipment that you can look at that will get you into the ballpark of achieving those same kind of tones. I mean, you know, you can't buy a Fender Eric Clapton Strat and a you know, amp like he uses and get exactly his tone. It's in the fingers. We all know that. But with the same tools that they have or the types of tools they're using, you can get close to those tones. And I think that helps you get closer to finding your own tone and your own personality. So that was really my goal, was to provide this resource that you could draw from to find your own tone.
You did a 45-minute video on that or something, didn't you?
I did, yeah. What we did is we picked, I don't remember how many guys it was, six or seven, maybe eight guys that we had time for, and I had the luxury of going into Sweetwater's warehouse and basically pulling out this truckload of equipment and going through different guys. It was everybody from Clapton to Jimmy Page to Hendrix, Eric Johnson, Eddie Van Halen, and we set about in this video kind of demonstrating how you could put these new pieces of gear together to achieve similar tones to what those guys get.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. I remember watching that. It was fun to watch. I mean, it would definitely be very helpful for anyone that just, you know, that wants to learn about a specific guy. So,
thanks.
It's neat to see, like, you know, because it's kind of funny. You see all these graphics and you search on the internet to find out like what Hendrix's pedal setup was. There's all a whole myth on where he had theories on where he had the wah pedal versus was it in front or before the, you know, before or after the Fuzz, and you know, then there's Stevie Ray Vaughan set up and all that stuff. And nowadays, you know, it seems to be very common that folks are doing these cool videos where they show exactly what they're touring with, which is really neat to see that nowadays.
Yeah, yeah, it is to get that kind of firsthand stuff. And when you go back a few years, it's harder to do that. So I tried to really dig in and do the research and get back and find what, you know, it's one thing to do it now with somebody who's touring now and you can go see what their rig is. It's another thing to get what Hendrix had or what Clapton had with Cream or whatever it was.
So what's your thoughts? Did Hendrix have the wah before or after the Fuzz in your opinion?
I think it was before.
Okay.
I think in the video, I think I did it both ways.
Did you?
You know, I'm sorry. I think he had it after because the wah is just so intense when he does it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, who knows with him? I mean, he didn't have.
He may have done it both ways.
Yeah,
who knows?
Because he did. I don't think he had a guitar tech or anything like that. I think he was his own guitar tech. But
right, right.
But Mitch, let me ask you then. Talking about Clapton on Cream, because he, you know, he used those Marshall stacks, but his sound was really unique when he was playing, especially the SG. What did you find out about how to get that sound?
The key to that sound is using the guitar's tone control.
Okay.
To roll that thing back to get what he calls the woman tone.
Mm-hmm.
It's I think a lot of people roll the tone control all the way back, and I don't think it's quite that far. I think it's back to, and maybe he did when I was doing it, for me, it seemed to work better when I'd roll it back about 70%. So there's still some highs getting through, so there's still some articulation.
Mm-hmm.
But it just, when you do that, the tone control rolls off high end, but it's also, it's a resonant electronic circuit, and it seems to change the body of the signal as well to my ears.
Mm-hmm.
And it really makes it sing and sustain when you roll that back. And so whether you're using the neck pickup or the bridge pickup, try rolling that tone control way back. It's also less distorted than people think it is. I think a lot of times people think you're going to do a Cream song and they wind the distortion way up. It's just not that. It's those Marshalls don't have master volume controls. He's cranking them all the way up and rolling back the tone control.
Yeah. Hendrix, when he was playing with the band of Gypsies, a lot of that was just the volume up. Actually, a lot of times he wasn't even using any type of distortion or anything, and he got this really great sound, but it was just the gain was so high on the Marshall.
Right.
Yeah.
That's all power tube distortion instead of preamp distortion.
No, I'll have to try that. I'll try rolling it, but not all the way. What about where did you roll off the tone control?
You said about
between 2 and 3.
2 and 3.
Yeah, give that a try. See what you think.
Okay. No, I will.
A neck pickup, right?
You can try it on both. But yeah, the neck pickup is where I think we think of it, but try it on the bridge pickup as well.
Interesting. That'd be cool. Did you get to check out some of the new stuff from Orange?
They had the dual dark, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it looked pretty impressive.
Yeah, it was it was loud. I shot a video with their main engineer, the guy that I think has designed all their amps in the past like 15 years, Abe Emsley.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you've been in this room, because it's probably the same one they have every year, but it's like 8 feet by 10 feet, if that. Plus, there's like stacks and stacks of Orange amps in there, and it was
right. 100-watt stack in a room like that is something to experience.
It was definitely something. I mean, and then after that, he had a 1,000-watt bass amp that he did in that same room, and I was just like, thank God I got a wide-angle lens, but holy, geez, this is moving. Talking about moving your pants. Well, let's play the clip. Let's hear. This is Aid actually playing the dual dark tear.
You were talking earlier about, can you simulate the sound of moving that air and everything? That you just have to imagine the way that vibrates your internal organs.
Yeah, that it was crazy, man. And then, you know, what's so funny is, I mean, I'm pretty sure he was not wearing earplugs when he was playing this. And then he goes and plugs in this 1,000-watt bass amp. And I'm like, oh my goodness, this guy's the one designing the amps. How is he not worried about hurting his ears? But he was super nice, and I'm really hoping we can get him on. He's thinking that he's going to be coming out to California, because he's from the pond, over the pond. But he's hoping that they'll be out in California at some point this year and doing a bunch of question and answers at stores and stuff. So hopefully we'll get him on and we can get him in here, and he's quite a character.
That'd be great.
But what was the other thing I was going to mention? It's now left me. Oh well,
the 5Z.
Well, we got the 5Z, but you know, since we're doing the these amps, we should play the Archon from the PRS. This is a clip of Archon. This is with Rhett Smith, the guy that was demoing it. So you'll hear him actually talking because it goes from clean, so you can hear the clean sound and hear the high gain. This is a PRS amp, Archon.
All right. So, clean channel of the Archon. Now let's get into the distorted stuff.
Pretty versatile little amp there. And pretty good playing by Rhett, too.
Yeah, he's a killer player. But yeah, that amp really had a nice sound.
Yeah. I know what I was going to mention. So I recorded all this stuff with the Sennheiser, but I was also going into the new Zoom H6, which, a little plug for Mitch and his company.
Thank you.
I bought from Sweetwater.
Mm-hmm.
And, thank you very much.
And it's a, you know, man, I wish I could get them to send me stuff for free, but... At Zoom, because I've been using them forever. I love those little recorders. That H6, they knocked it out of the park, I have to say.
That's a really cool piece for location recording. Even if you're, I mean, even working at home and capturing ideas or whatever you're doing, that thing works great.
Yeah, you know what's cool is like, I can even play, like I can plug in, like I have an AA ribbon, the N22 mic. I can just plug it directly into that thing, which is crazy to even think you can plug a ribbon mic in that sucker, but... But, you know, the interesting thing about that was I had emailed my sales guy over there because I couldn't, you know, it has this 99 takes thing where you can do overdubbing and you can, you know, do 99 up to 99 takes. And I was doing this and I was singing something and I screwed up the first track. And so the second track I wanted to hear, but I couldn't figure out how the heck to listen to the different takes because I kept wanting to play the first take. So I asked, couldn't find out the answer, couldn't find it in the brochure. So I went to Zoom's... booth at NAMM, and eventually after about 10 minutes of them telling me, oh, there's no way you can do it, you just have to do it when you're listening, you know, Pro Tools or whatever, they brought over the guy that wrote the software and he walks over and presses two buttons and shows everybody how to do it.
Nice.
So I'll have to do a video on that because it's yeah, there's got to be other people out there that's they're banging their head trying to figure out how the heck to listen to the different takes. So,
or send me an email with that in, and I'll post it as a tech tip on our site for people.
Yeah, it's you know, it's actually quite simple, but it's just not obvious anywhere. Like it's I can tell the folks listening to it that has one. When you go into overdub, when you're in the overdub mode and you hit stop, if you want to listen to the different takes, you use what on a lot of recorders would be next and previous buttons to switch to the takes. So,
okay.
Yeah, so like I was trying to go through the menu system, all this stuff, but you just press the next and previous buttons as it stopped in overdub, and then you can flip through all the different takes.
Nice.
Yeah, so, but yeah, it was crazy. Like the sales guy's like, I should know this, and I don't know it. But, yeah, but yeah, you know, we're coming to the end of the show, and just tell us, Mitch, how can people find out more about you and more about Sweetwater? I mean, obviously, we know sweetwater.com, you're our sponsor. Right. Do you have your own website or anything like that?
I do, yeah. MitchGallagher.com is my website, and there's information about me up there. There's probably a lot more at Sweetwater.com than there is on my own site. And then all the videos we have, the Sweetwater Facebook/Sweetwater site as well, where there's tons of stuff up there. And our YouTube page has a couple thousand videos at this point, so there's tons and tons of stuff up there.
Very cool. Well, we want to thank you for taking the time. I know it's late over there. It's probably about midnight for you.
No, that's fine. I'm a musician. I'm up late.
Well, great.
Not a problem.
Well, we appreciate it. Hang on the line so we can chat with you after the show. But next week's guest is Bruce Boulay from Racer X. So that'll be very cool. He'll be in the studio, and I'm hoping he will be bringing guitar with him.
Yes. Good night, everybody. Have a great week.